After completing the Everyman's Battle weekend, I had a true, convicted, and repentful heart and realized how much I was hurting God, myself, and others. I will continue to reach out to my brothers and my group and use all the resources that are available to me. So Billy's told as a child, son, you go out there and conquer as many women as you can. Just don't bring them into the house. Then it's okay. I mean, what kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
What kind of dad is that? Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not sure by any standard.
Yeah. So then later in life, Billy becomes a Christian. He gets married. And though he knows that it's wrong for him to do these things, he's doing them anyway. And he decides, well, you know what? I'm just going to go with prostitutes or whatever. That way there's no, I guess he's thinking there's no emotional relationship there. I don't know. He's just trying to get his fix, as he said it. Then he gets caught in this sting operation. The bottom drops out. Thankfully, he enrolled in Everyman's Battle, where decades of wrong thinking was disrupted thanks to the band of brothers that he met at the workshop.
Well, and you know, when you approach sex as an entitlement above all other needs, it never goes well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I can go on for days just about entitlement and how destructive it is. But I think one of the unseen sufferings is the suffering of the addict themselves on the internal side of it. And that really is driven by shame and isolation. And that this is the only way that they can connect. And, you know, C.S. Lewis had this quote of like, you know, talking about life with God is that we are that we become okay with making mud puddles in the gutter because we don't understand what a holiday at sea is. And that describes the sexual addiction really well. We think we're getting really, you know, these great experiences or the things that we need only because we don't understand that there is a much, much better way to live, a much better way to do relationships, and much better way to understand and work out our sexual issues and struggles and really coming into a proper design and place. And to find relief from the shame and the isolation, I cannot express enough how that is holiday at sea. It's living life in a totally new and different way. And so oftentimes the tragedy is that it's the external suffering or the external damage that creates the internal motivation to move forward in getting help. And that just is what it is. But I just want to encourage guys that are out there struggling in this. Your internal suffering is enough. It's enough. You know, find that 30-second phone call, 30 seconds of courage to make the phone call, 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
And do it before there is the external pressure.
Yes,
because that's way more humiliating.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so, again, I can't encourage you enough because it's not just about this, you know, white knuckling around our sexuality. It's about finding internal freedom in this whole new different way in which we become safe people. We develop safe, strong marriages, and our sexual urges aren't controlling and destroying our lives.
Now, there might be the guy saying, well, you know what? I'm not hurting anybody by what I'm doing. There might be a single guy who's listening. And he's thinking, I've got no family. I've got no wife and kids. I'm not going to hurt anybody. What's the big deal?
Said every addict of any kind.
Yeah.
Right?
Thank you, Jill.
Right? It's just affecting me, not anyone else.
Yeah.
We don't live in a vacuum. We're not on an island. Everything we do affects. The isolation affects people that 100%. We love. The avoidance.
You know, that's a really good point, Jill, because one of the things, like I'll just speak of my own trauma. My childhood trauma was a trauma of abandonment, of when my father left the family. So the irony of this is that my sexual addiction was also an abandonment that I couldn't see was causing other people. The strong denial mechanism, well, it's only hurting me or it's only affecting me. But by taking myself out through, again, addiction and isolation or through deep withdrawal is a form of abandonment that we can't see the harm that we're causing. And I'm like, my own experience, but treating other people through abandonment trauma, that's a really tough one. So God created us to engage. God created us to be a part of, not apart from. God created us to be life givers, not life takers. And so when we treat sex as a conquering thing, that's a taker. Mm-hmm. That's not generous. Mm. That's not regenerative. That's way outside of God's design.
And it's not love.
No, it's anything but love. You know? Yeah. There's that old Carnes book, Don't Call It Love. And right. I'm like, yep, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's talk for a few minutes, because I want to read one of these questions that was sent to us online, but I don't want to stop reading it when the music starts. So let's talk about entitlement for a couple of minutes.
Yes.
You said you could talk about it for the rest of the hour. Well, let's just do it for a few minutes.
Man, it's such a cancer. You know, I was working with a corporation earlier in the week, and they have a very, very high performer who generates a lot of income for the company, but they treat other people horrifically. Mm. Mm. And they're afraid to confront the employee because of what I came up with was performance entitlement. Mm. Because I've done such a good job, I'm entitled to treat people poorly. What they didn't understand was this was toxifying the entire culture. There was a cost-benefit analysis that was being overlooked in this person's entitlement. And so when we start seeing that, there was another person in the organization who I call that had a popularity entitlement. They weren't doing their job. They weren't following through in tasks, but everyone liked them. It was like the opposite end of the coin. Entitlement says that I don't have to be responsible. I don't have to do what other people do because
I've
earned the right this other way. And it predicates on this very, very dangerous word called deserve. Mm-hmm. I don't like the word deserve. I would get rid of it because it's so subjective. It's so arbitrary and so weaponized. The better word, if we would replace it, is need. What do I need? What do you need? What does this company need? What does a job need? When we start engaging in need, you know, and responsibility, it's just such a much better way because it's a healthier way. Mm-hmm. Forward. And if we start addressing entitlement, and I'll tell you two things that do not go together. They're impossible. Generosity cannot coexist with entitlement. Mm. And God called us to be generous. Mm-hmm. And knowing that generosity comes back, it's regenerative. And so entitlement blocks that flow and makes us smaller, not bigger.
Right. Well, an entitlement is a form of pride, and pride is the opposite side of the coin of shame. And so usually the shame is fueling the pride and the entitlement.
That's so good, Jill. Yep. Yep.
So how did you handle this guy who's bringing in so much money for the company? Because management doesn't want to talk to him. They're afraid he'll leave and go to the competition, maybe.
Well, it's a longer story. Yeah. It's a longer story.
In 10 seconds.
But yes. Oh. Well, I'll say this. You know, there was a quote by Peter Drucker. It says, culture eats strategy for breakfast, meaning that culture is the most powerful thing in your organization. I said, your culture is now toxified. You've got to detoxify it.
Wow.
Entitlement's not going to work here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.